Translation purported by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. After a short time passed, both brothers Rama and Krishna began to crawl on the ground of Braja with the strength of their hands and knees and thus enjoy their childhood play. Purport. One Brahmana devotee says, Shutam apare smritim itare Bharatam anne bhajantu bhavabita Ahamiha nandam bande yasyalinge param brahma. Let others, fearing material existence, worship the Vedas, the Vedic supplementary, Puranas and the Mahabharata, but I shall worship Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard the Supreme Brahman is crawling. For a highly exalted devotee, Kaivalya, merging into the existence of the Supreme, appears no better than hell, Narakayate. But here, one can simply think of the crawling of Krishna and Balaram in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj and always merge in transcendental happiness. As long as one is absorbed in thoughts of Krishna Lila, especially Krishna's childhood pastimes, as Parikshit Maharaj desired to be, one is always merged in actual Kaivalya. Therefore, Vyasadev compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, Lokasya Janato Vidvam, Chakre Satvata Samhita, Bhagavatam 176. Vyasadev compiled Srimad Bhagavatam under the instruction of Narada so that anyone can take advantage of the literature, think of Krishna's pastimes, and always be liberated. Shutim apane smritim itare bharatam anye bhajantu bhava bhuta aham ihanandam mande yasyalinde param brahma. Kalena Rajatalpena Gukale Rama Keshava Janubhyam Saha Panibhyam Ringamano Vijaratu. After a short time passed, both brothers Rama and Krishna began to crawl on the ground of Braja with the strength of their hands and knees and thus enjoy their childhood play. So here Shukadeva Goswami continues describing the childhood activities of Krishna and Balaram. And because they lived in a village and they played the parts of human children, and so they were exhibiting their crawling pastimes. And they really enjoyed it. Of course, this is a kind of secret which no other religious tradition knows, that God is tending cows in a village. You know, for most people it would be like, what are you talking about? God, the supreme controller and enjoyer, is living in some little village and herding cows and crawling in the dust. Raman Reti, that the very place where our Vrindavan temple is situated is called Raman Reti because Reti is a plural from Renu. Renu means dust, so there is plenty of dust in that area. And this is Ramana, means bringing joy, bringing pleasure, because Krishna and Balaram played in that dust and they had a lot of fun. And someone may say, well, this is not what we expect God to do, play in the dust and get all dusty. But, yeah, the special feature of God is that he doesn't do what we want him to do. He does whatever he wants to do. So if he wants to play in the dust, who can stop him? And so this is our philosophy, that the Supreme Lord is the supreme enjoyer. And actually, he sometimes performs these amazing activities to help people think about him. And so those who are materialistic and atheistic, they think, you know, what is this? God is crawling in the dust. God is herding cows. How can the Hare Krishnas be so crazy to believe in these things? And they think, Krishna, why Krishna is God? How come that Krishna is God? And who are the Hare Krishnas? So these people thinking, Krishna, 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 hey! And after a while, after they thought enough of these things, they become devotees. I know so many cases. People protesting against Krishna consciousness and having a lot of problems with everything connected to our movement. Like some parents of some devotees. And you think, you know, all these people are real demons. But after a very short time, you see them with tilak on their foreheads and with the chanting beads in their hands in the temple. And you wonder, what happened? Well, because Prabhupada explains. Well, actually, not just Prabhupada, but Krishna explains. Yesham tvantagatam papam janana punya karmanam tadvanda mohanir muktam bhajante mam dridavrata. This is chapter 7, text 28, very important text, wherein Krishna explains that yesham tvantagatam papam, those who are completely finished with all their sinful activities, janana punya karmanam, that those who accumulated a lot of piety, tadvandva mohanir muktam, they become free from duality of illusions, and bhajanti mam dridavrata, they began worship me with great determination. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Shri Shri Gornitai Ki Jai. So we can understand that this spiritual, this piety, these verses speaking about, is spiritual piety. It's not just by digging wells or, you know, planting trees or helping old ladies across the road. This is how you can become determined in serving Krishna. Spiritual piety means you become purified by coming in touch with anything connected to Krishna, whether it be prasadam, holy name, devotee association, Prabhupada's books, seeing deities, anything. And then after a while, after one accumulates enough of that piety, after one gets enough exposure to Krishna consciousness, then one actually becomes a devotee. One takes up to Krishna consciousness, how we can say, consciously or willingly. And I'm sure if I'll ask all of you, if you remember, how did you end up in here, sitting on the floor and spending your Thursday morning listening to some, you know, exotic philosophy, you'll probably also be able to track it down. How did you, well, of course, except those of you who are rare, fortunate souls who happen to be born in the movement or be born of Krishna conscious devotees in India, there are still few. But if that didn't happen, if you didn't have that fortune, you can probably easily observe in your life how first you started getting encounters with the Krishna consciousness, and it didn't immediately ring the bell. It only happened after a while, after we accumulated enough piety, then it shifted from the unconscious to the conscious level, right? And we've decided, yeah, actually it's not a bad thing. Being a Hare Krishna, let me do it. And we became convinced. And so this is why Krishna performs all these pastimes, for the sake of materialistic people, to attract their attention. And for the sake of the devotees as well, because devotees are really enjoying those pastimes. How Krishna and Balaram are crawling in the dust, or how they are crawling in the mud of Braj. And so from materialistic point of view, of course, this is something not very pleasurable, crawling in the dust or crawling in the mud, but we should remember that this is not an ordinary place. It's Vrindavan. And so it's a spiritual world which is described in Brahma Samhita very elaborately. Shri Akanta Kantha Parama Purusha Kalpatara Vodruma Bhumis Chintamani Toyam Amritam Kataganam Natyam Gamanapam Vivamshi Priya Sakhi. That this is the world where, you know, rivers of nectar are flowing everywhere, and the ground, the earth, is not an ordinary. It all consists of the Chintamani stones. So even the dust of Raj is not an ordinary. It's the greatest dust. You know, it's not even a stardust, whatever it's worth. It's Chintamani dust. It's spiritual dust. So it gives a lot of pleasure. I remember we were doing Govardhan Parikrama with His Holiness Bibi Govinda Maharaj, and he said, probably many of you heard of Chernobyl in Ukraine, the place where the nuclear plant exploded. And so, you know, the whole place became radioactive. And Govinda Maharaj, he likes to joke, so he, you know, pointed at the dust of Govardhan. And he said, this dust is more powerful than the dust of Chernobyl. And because if you, you know, smear the dust of Chernobyl on your body will start glowing. But if you smear the Govardhan dust on your body, your soul will start glowing. So, and this is how the devotees appear so different from ordinary materialistic people, because devotees, you know, are feeling enthused, excited, and happy in Krishna consciousness. And so, naturally, they have this glow, spiritual glow in their personality, which can never really be found in materialistic people. Of course, we're not talking just limited to our movement, because, as Prabhupada says, devotees are appearing in any traditions. And so, if someone is God-conscious, and if someone is practicing something spiritual seriously, then that spiritual glow will also emanate. And so, of course, the pure devotees, like Srila Prabhupada, that was so obvious, like the famous episode when Srila Prabhupada was walking in central London, taking his walk. And it was early morning, and early morning, central London is very quiet and peaceful. Hardly anyone's there, except the, cleaning and watering machines. And then this policeman was standing at the crossroads, and Srila Prabhupada passed by him, and then the devotees followed, and the last one behind was Shyamasundar Prabhu. And then policeman actually ran behind Shyamasundar and caught up with him, and he said, "Who is that man?" Shyamasundar said, "Well, he is our spiritual master, he is our guru, Srila Prabhupada." And policeman said, "It's unbelievable. This old man is glowing like a sun." So, you know, this spiritual glow becomes so obvious that even ordinary people can see that. And so we can understand that whatever the descriptions are given in Bhagavatam, they have nothing to do with, you know, similar descriptions or similar situations in the material world. It's pure joy. Krishna is enjoying his pastimes, and everybody is enjoying whoever comes in contact with those pastimes. And Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport very interesting point. He says that because, yeah, actually he quotes that verse, and it's very interesting. It says, one Brahmana devotee says. Which Brahmana devotee says, we don't know, and we'll probably never be able to find out. But this verse has been quoted in Chaitanya-charitamrita because it was quoted by Raghupati Upadhyaya, great devotee and associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And Srila Rupa Goswami got so inspired that he included this particular verse in his personal verse book. You know, Rupa Goswami had his favorite verses, and so he compiled them in a book which he called Padyavali. And it's also quoted in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or Nectar of Devotion as we know it. And so this verse says that let others fearing material existence worship the Vedas, the Vedic supplementary Puranas, and the Mahabharata, but I shall worship Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard the Supreme Brahman is crawling. So why people worship Vedic literature? Why are they developing spiritual knowledge or striving for spiritual knowledge? What's the benefit coming from spiritual knowledge? What is the result of developing spiritual knowledge? It is liberation from material existence. And so, therefore, those who fear the material existence, they can develop spiritual knowledge for liberation. But then this great devotee, he says, I don't care about spiritual knowledge or liberation. And when people don't care about these things, say, like, when don't you care about eating? At what times you don't care about eating? When you're completely satisfied. When don't you care about sleeping? When you're fully rested, right? And so we can understand that this particular pure devotee doesn't care about knowledge or liberation from material existence, because he already have full knowledge and he already have complete liberation. So it doesn't bother him. He says, I'll better worship Nanda Maharaj, because in his courtyard the Supreme Lord is crawling. And so we can understand that why people develop spiritual knowledge, like impersonalists. They develop spiritual knowledge to become liberated which means they want to become free from the laws of material nature. Some people who are even more ambitious, you know, impersonalists, they are, we can say, the least ambitious, because they just don't want to be controlled by the laws of God, right? But then Mayavadis, they are more ambitious, because they think, what is this, you know, I'm controlled by the laws of God. And instead of just becoming free from the control of the laws of God, let me try to become God myself. Then I'll be setting the laws, right? And so, but who are the most ambitious transcendentalists? Vaishnavas. Because they don't care about becoming free from the laws of God. And Prabhupada was saying, what is this nonsense? Try to become God. And he says, devotees are so great, of course, speaking about real devotees like Nanda Maharaj and others, they become greater than God. That God is surrendering unto his great devotees, like Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda. Like we can see so many instances, like in Damodar Leela. Just recently we went through the Kartik Masa, and this episode when, if you remember, I'm sure all of you remember, when Krishna is sleeping in his room and Mother Yashoda taking the opportunity to churn yogurt to make the butter, right? And she's singing. And Krishna wakes up and she's meditating on Krishna, how, you know, she will serve Krishna, how she will feed Krishna. And she's singing very wonderful kirtan, and Krishna wakes up, and then, because Mother Yashoda has this desire to please Krishna by feeding him, immediately he becomes very hungry, and he crawls up to Mother Yashoda, and she takes him on her hands and starts feeding him with her breast milk. And Krishna is really enjoying, because it's not just her mother's breast milk, that's the topmost quality, pure love for him. And so he's just consuming this love of his mother and enjoying that so much. And he decides that I'll never give it up. I'll just continue drinking that breast milk forever because it's so nice. I'm not interested in anything else. And then suddenly the milk on the stove starts boiling over. And then Mother Yashoda thinks, oh no, that I have to save that milk. So in order to do that, I have to, you know, put Krishna down, interrupt the process of, you know, his breastfeeding. And Krishna, even though he's a tiny little baby, he is still the Supreme Lord. And so he's all-powerful Supreme Lord. And just prior to that, we know Putana came to Braj, and she was trying to poison Krishna with her breast milk by, you know, smearing her breast with a deadly poison, Kalakuta. And Krishna accepted that. He sucked her breast. But then, you know, she was so powerful. She was huge. I mean, the what was the height of Putana? 12 miles? 12 miles high. Can you imagine someone 12 miles high? I mean, 12 miles is probably from here to Edgeway or something, right? More. Yeah, from here to Harrow. Can you imagine someone that tall? How powerful that personality would be. And so, you know, Putana was that big and powerful, and Krishna was just a tiny little baby. And when Krishna started sucking out not just her breast milk, but her life air from the body, and Putana tried to, you know, separate Krishna from her breast and, you know, put him down or throw him down, whatever. And she couldn't, because Krishna, you know, just grabbed her and he was sucking her breast until she died. So this is the powerful, this is the power of Krishna, you know. But then Mother Yashoda, she is not 12 miles high. And she never worked so hard to develop all these mystic powers to transform herself into any form she wants. And we never hear about Mother Yashoda flying in the air, etc., etc. She's not displaying all these mystic powers like Putana. But when, you know, she grabbed on Krishna to separate him, to interrupt his breastfeeding, Krishna felt, okay, danger. You know, red light. So Mother Yashoda is trying to stop me from drinking her breast milk. That will never happen. And it's described that Krishna actually grabbed upon Mother Yashoda with all his might, with his both his hands and feet, being very determined, no matter what she does, she'll never be able to stop me from drinking her breast milk. But then, Mother Yashoda just took him and with no effort, just separated him and put him on the ground and then ran to take care of the, you know, overboiling milk. And you can imagine Krishna's, feeling. He became so heartbroken that Mother Yashoda dealt with him so easily. Just, you know, separated him and put him on the ground as if, you know, he never tried to stay on. That he started crying because, you know, he was so upset. So we can see how powerful devotees are. Devotees are, of course, talking about pure devotees, more powerful than the Supreme Lord. So that's why Prabhupada says that devotees are the most ambitious people. You know, they don't want to become God. They want to become higher than God. But not for the sake of controlling and enjoying, but for the sake of serving the Supreme Lord with love. And that's why Krishna is giving the devotees so much power. You know, Krishna is giving the devotees more power than he himself exhibits. Again, like Srila Prabhupada's example, when he was having his morning walk at Bombay, I believe, and then one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, if Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Lord, so why didn't he spread Krishna consciousness all over the world? He wanted that, and so, you know, he could easily do that being the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada liked that question so much that he even stopped. He turned around, firmly put his cane in the ground, and he said, Lord Chaitanya haven't done that because he wanted me to do it. So we can see that Krishna is empowering his pure devotee to do what even he doesn't do. Krishna is empowering Arjuna to fight, even though he could easily finish everyone. But why does he do that? What's the reason why Krishna haven't done that himself? Why did he wanted Arjuna to fight? Yes, so that Arjuna would be glorified. Krishna is glorious enough. He's not worried about, you know, becoming more glorious. But he wants his devotees to be glorified. And so, if Krishna wants his devotees to be glorified, we can easily put the two together. You know, if we will do something to make devotees glorious, what would Krishna think about it? What would be Krishna's attitude? He'll be more happy. Even comparing to when we would glorify him, if we would glorify Krishna's devotee, Krishna would be more happy. And this is the reason why we're holding Prabhupada's marathon every year. Distributing Prabhupada's books, and the main book Prabhupada wanted everyone to read and follow is Bhagavad Gita. And it's very interesting, you know. December marathon is very convenient because it's the December of Christmas, the month of Christmas, but it's also a month of Bhagavad Gita. Because Bhagavad Gita appeared in December, and we're going to be celebrating it in very few days. And actually, without Srila Prabhupada, no one would, I mean, before Srila Prabhupada, no one could really figure out, at least outside of India, what the Bhagavad Gita is about. And just reading Bhagavad Gita, information contained in Bhagavad Gita was not bringing the transformation. It actually brought, after Srila Prabhupada presented his Bhagavad Gita as it is. And we can understand how powerful Srila Prabhupada's books, that they completely transform people's lives. And this is the reason why we want all these books to be distributed. And there are so many instances how that was happening, is happening, and will be happening. Like just recently, I mean, before coming here, I was in Moscow. And one Moscow devotee, he recollects his memories. How did he become a devotee? He was a voracious meat eater. You know, he was one of those people who cannot imagine themselves, you know, not eating meat. And but still, he had some interest towards philosophy. And so when devotee approached him on the street with Bhagavad Gita and Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai, and he said, this is a book on ancient Indian spiritual philosophy. He became curious, and so he got Bhagavad Gita. He brought it home and started reading it, and it didn't take him too long to come across the passage wherein Srila Prabhupada condemns meat eating. And then he became so upset, he said, oh, this man, this author, he wants me to stop eating meat. That will never happen. And never say never, right? So he put the book, and he was convinced that he'll never open the book again. And he went to his kitchen to cook meat. And after he cooked it and he tried to eat it, and he felt so sick, he vomited the whole thing. He thought, something's wrong with my health. So he waited for a while, then he became hungry. He cooked this meat again. He ate it again. He vomited. Again, he felt sick. And no matter how, you know, like he checked, his health was all right. Nothing was wrong, but he just couldn't take any meat anymore. And he tried a few times, and then he said, I realized, you know, these people through that book probably put some spell on me. I cannot take any meat. And, you know, I only have two choices, you know, to become vegetarian or die. So better I become vegetarian. And he was one of those guys who have zero idea about vegetarian lifestyle. So in his mind, to be a vegetarian meant to eat cucumbers only. Somehow he had this idea that if I'm vegetarian, I have to, till the rest of my life, I have to eat only cucumbers and nothing else. And so he went to the market, he bought himself like, you know, a bag of cucumbers, came home, you know, peeled them, and with tears in his eyes, started eating those cucumbers. And, you know, that went for a while. And then after a couple of days, he realized, that's horrible. I cannot live like that. What do I do? Anyway, I guess the only option, you know, these guys, they put a spell on me. So they forced me to become a vegetarian, but I have to figure out how do I survive being vegetarian like that. So I have to go and find them and, you know, ask them, how do you survive? You know, if all of you are vegetarians, how this is possible? And so he actually found the temple. He came and he asked one devotee, you know, like, are you all vegetarians? How do you survive? You know, it's impossible. And the devotee, you know, round-faced and very happy-looking, he said, oh, we survived very nicely. And apparently it was like Sunday feast or something, so they gave him full plate of prasadam. He said, oh, this is easy. I can live like that. And so naturally he had to learn how to cook and everything, and automatically he started chanting japa, etc. So we can see how much power is there in Prabhupada's books, that, you know, just by holding it and reading it, one lost his greatest attachment. And so, therefore, we want these books to be spread far and wide, and all the people read Prabhupada's books, because this is how the whole world becomes transformed. And of course, you know, we have some opposition. Yesterday I was sharing with the devotees that you cannot imagine how fortunate you are to live in Great Britain. Great Britain is really great because you have so much freedom that you don't have any opposition to the Krishna consciousness movement here. But, you know, Russia, that's like one surprise after the other. I was sharing with the devotees yesterday that many of you probably remember the trial case against Bhagavad Gita last December. And so we won that trial case, and we were naive enough to think that that's it, that this victory guarantees that we can continue Krishna consciousness without any obstruction. And this year we found that we were dead wrong. Of course, that Bhagavad Gita trial case was like a sledgehammer applied on us, so they couldn't break us. You know, Krishna and devotees protected us. But then they've decided, okay, if the sledgehammer doesn't work, we'll just use the nuclear weapon against them to wipe them out. So what they did this year, and funny enough, it always happens on this, in December, on Krishna's marathon. So they want us to you know, fight our Kurukshetra for real in Russia. And they organized a horrible smear campaign using TV, because everybody's watching TV, and they run a couple of programs about how horrible Hare Krishnas are, how they destroy families and beat up children and do, you know, all kinds of things the cults supposed to do. And there was not a single devotee to say a word. It was just, you know, these guys. And they entered into the government. They have just justice minister on their side. They have, what do you call it, home minister or interior minister on their side, as well as few other very influential politicians. And they produced a document which is a guideline for every single government official in the entire Russia. And the whole document, you know, the crescendo, the ending of the document is describing us in such a horrible light that we're, you know, one of the most dangerous cult. It's just one step away from being terrorists. But otherwise, we're against the government. We want to, you know, throw up the government. We want to destroy people's lives. We promote murders and suicides and all kinds of things. And so now, you know, every single government official will read that document. And because most of them have no idea who we are, they will take it for real. And we can just imagine what will be the result. And it's already happening already. There are so many court cases against the devotees because, you know, whatever preaching devotee is trying to do, they're immediately getting arrested. And, you know, the trial cases against them are happening all over the country. Our poor lawyer is just flying all over the country and he says, I don't even have time to make money, you know, because I have to fight all these court cases, and some devotee gave me a little donation, but I'm not sure how much longer I will last. And there are more and more court cases all over the country. And so, and devotees are really concerned. And it just happened recently. Big blow. And devotees don't know what to do. But I told them, it's actually Krishna's mercy. Because this man, who is the leader of the anti-cult movement, and who is like die-hard against us, you know, he's so creative, it's amazing. And it could only happen with Krishna's empowerment. You know, such a determination, such a persistent hatred against us, you know, that without Krishna's intervention, it's not possible. And he does that because he wants us to fight big way, big time. And if we do that, and this time we have no chance to win on our own because we're not big enough. You know, we could, you know, attracting India's support and attracting the support of the academics in Russia, of Russian Academy of Science, we could win that Bhagavad Gita trial case because it was local. But now all this campaign is spread all over the country. And so there are so many fires, we have zero chances to put them down ourselves. And therefore, our only chance is to join hands with other, what they call minor or new religious groups, even though, you know, some of them much older than so-called traditional religions, you know, minor religious groups, because they also suffer. It's not only us. We are very high on their priority list, but what they want to wipe out every single religious group which is not, you know, which doesn't belong to so-called traditional religions, which are four, and we're not included. Hinduism is not included at all. It's not considered to be traditional for Russia. And so, and their approach is very effective, because what they say, that Russia has to be run by Russians and has to develop in Russian style, and all these foreign religious groups, they just destroy our country. And so we should stop and eliminate everything and everyone who is connected with these foreign religious groups. So, and the only chance we have is to join hands with other new religious groups, and then we can influence the government. So that's our only opportunity. Of course, we need Indian help, we need everybody's help now, but it's fun. It's Kurukshetra. It's for real. And so, actually, many devotees are saying, you know, like, nobody, no matter how much we preach, but how many people in Russia know about us? Practically no one. But if we actually organize a nationwide campaign to defend our constitutional rights, what they call it, freedom of faith, right, or freedom of conscience, as they say in Russia, everybody will learn about us. So apparently it's Krishna's plan. And so it's very interesting what's happening. And yeah, it seems to be scheduled, you know, every single December. They come up with some, you know, nasty surprise. But actually, like, Russia always been like that. And every time it factually helps so many other people all over the world to learn about Krishna consciousness. So it seems like this is Russia's role, to go through trouble again and again with Krishna consciousness to help promote the movement globally. So, but yeah. I mean, hypothetically, of course, it could happen also in UK. So, but for now, it's nothing like that. And so it's a huge contrast with what's going on in Russia and here. Here it's like a spiritual paradise. And Russia is like a big forest fire. So, but yeah, we want to worship pure devotee of Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, resident of Vrindavan, and this is our sacrifice. This is our yagya, Sankirtan yagya, for his pleasure. And we can see that Krishna is happy with this yagya, because Lord Chaitanya's plan for the development of the golden age is obviously, you know, going forward. So no matter what we have to go through, we're still happy, because it's Krishna's desire. Hare Krishna.